my name's Nicole, and this is another episode, I guess, of Getting Candid About Race. This time we're going to be talking about Asian identity. I am half Asian, and the other half is from the Caribbean. So I'm quarter Indian, quarter Chinese. However, I'm quite black passing, and this is...
Hi, everyone. I'm Zoe. I'm from China, so I'm 100% authentic Chinese.
Hi, I'm Serena. I'm half Welsh and half Indian, but I've grown up in Singapore for the last 6 years of my life.
Okay.
So, yeah.
My opening question is going to be to the both of you, and it's going to be one of the, I guess, most expected things. How do you guys feel about people mocking Asian accents?
Do you want to go first, or should I?
Yeah, because... talking about my own, like, personal experience, I didn't quite experience that kind of things, like my accent being mocking or something like that. But I do feel like it's quite an offensive way to do that, because I think people are just trying to show that, well, your accent's just not good. We're not, like, accepting you as part of our society. But I think if it's just something... funny to talk about among friends, I feel like that's acceptable.
Okay.
Yeah, I mean, I feel like in terms of Indian accents, my family's British Indian, and my grandmother's always had a very Indian accent, but obviously all me and my cousins don't. And I think a lot of people do immediately start interpreting the Indian accent. It's one you quite commonly hear being mocked in this way. I think obviously if it's done in an offensive way, and if it's done in order to provoke some kind of discontent or any kind of joke, I really wouldn't be a fan of it. I think you don't really particularly see people mocking accents in positive lights. I mean, I get it if it's for a little joke and you're with your family and it's people who might get it, or like if it's like my Indian family, like me, who sound completely British but are obviously Indian, sometimes do mock like my grandmother if she's like getting mad at us or something like that, or like if we're joking. I know my dad, who's Welsh, would definitely sometimes mock my mum if she suddenly goes into her Indian accent. But even then, I think there's a line. He also worked in India for a long time, and he's very accepting of the culture. So I think there's some kind of contextual, as with everything, contextual boundaries. And I think as soon as you need to know someone well enough to do that, and I think on the day-to-day, it's just not something you should do. I think it's something which is probably should be frowned upon, because it's just not something which should be culturally accepted. If I'm honest, it's a mockery.
Yeah, I totally agree with Serena. So definitely don't do that with someone that you're not familiar with. It's just an offensive way to do things.
But if it's like your friend and you're joking and you know they're not going to take offense to it, and you've like can kind of, you're sure of that, then yeah, like make a joke, do it. It's quite funny. But let be also, you have to be open for them to then mock your culture. Like, this isn't a one-way road.
Yeah. I can't believe I didn't start with this one, but what do you guys think of people thinking all Asian look the same?
That's just,
well, I mean,
joke.
We're pretty much an example of the fact that that's not true.
Exactly.
Yeah, exactly. Like, I mean, as a Chinese, and particularly China is in East Asia, that we look very so-called typical Asian people. So when people talking about Asian, they would like think about, oh, from China or whatever. I do feel like when people think about Asians, just they look like same, it's just like a joke, because Asia is huge. I mean, learn geography. They're like, it's huge, and also we have so many different cultures, that which makes us not only different from our appearance, but also out from our inner like mindset or values. So we're basically very different.
Yeah, I mean, I'm Indian, and I mean, visually as well, we are different. We are brown. There is literal differences in how we are defined in terms of our racial definition. We are different. Our genetics are different. The way we look is different, starkly different, to the point that I don't think you can really lobby anyone into these groups. I mean, as with everything, and I think on a global scale, we've started to realize that these kind of demographic groups are something which need to be modernized and kind of complexified to maybe sure we know those nuances within them. And then they shouldn't even be nuances, if I'm honest, at this point. And I think within even the Indian communities, being North Indian and South Indian is like being Canadian and American. These are completely different areas. You might look completely the same in or what from the outside eye, but actually, even in North and South India, you're normally darker if you're from the South and lighter if you're from the North, just because of where you are located geographically. But that kind of nuance within that, you should be able to not have to lobby that in, because I know Indian people aren't the same as Chinese people or Malay people or Indonesian people, and so on and so forth. I know within India, my grandfather is North Indian and my grandmother is South Indian. So the fact that they're even married is like almost as scandalous as the fact that my mum, who's brown, married someone who's white. So there's also those kind of cultural things within it. And you have cultural, you eat different food if you're from the South and different food from your, when you're from the North. I know in different provinces, you eat different things.
Yeah.
Very similar. It's that kind of cultural separation as well, which I think people don't quite realise. It's basically just like saying, well, you're European if you're from Italy, but not European if you're from France. Or you are. It's kind of, you need to be able to break it down. You need to say they're French, they're Italian, they're Malaysian, they're Singaporean, they're Chinese, they're Indian. And I think it's kind of embarrassing when you are lobbying Asians in the sense of like a brown person and someone who's not are the same identity. There is, yeah, you should be able to accept that there are differences.
Yeah, just like a small detail to add on is like people will say that Korean, Japanese and Chinese people, yeah, look most alike, like within like East Asian region. I would say that we are very different culturally speaking, although we have a lot of similarities, but we have like huge differences as well. So I feel like next time we see someone looking very much like East Asian, it's better to ask them whether are you from Asia or like East Asia, but not are you from Chinese or are you from China or like Japan or South Korea, just directly. That's just not nice.
Going on from that, I know in like Indian culture is the same. You have like Pakistanis, and if you're from Bangladesh, and if you're from maybe the Nepalese region, and Indian, you just kind of get lobbied in. I used to have a Pakistani friend, and we used to always get lobbied in. It's just like, oh well, he's Indian, and he hated it because, of course, there's, if anyone who knows like the political history, that's not something you want to say. That's like saying, oh no, that's like saying a German and a Brit and a English person is the same during World War II. Don't do it. It's just not a good idea. And I think that's, I mean, it's just that kind of respect for the cultural divide. Also, I find it really weird how they always say like all Asians look the same, because I mean, if you're white, you also have that kind of, you all look the same. You cannot tell the difference between an American and like an ethnically English person from looking at them. And it makes sense why, because they are immigrants. But then even in Europe, there are sometimes, the only differences you can kind of tell are because of adaptation to the environment. Yeah. And I guess that's literally the same everywhere. It's just taking that time to have a look. Nobody looks the same. It's you being lazy and not adapting your eye to see the differences. And to be honest, like when I moved to Singapore, I started realizing like I can tell if someone's Korean very easily or Japanese.
Yeah.
And I'm like working on it. And everyone's still like, yeah. So you get these like little, you start to train yourself. But obviously sometimes you just can't. Like sometimes I struggle with Pakistani and Indian. But you learn. It's like about figuring it out and talking to them, literally what you said, just ask.
Yeah, I think Serena brings up a very interesting point, is that I think because at least in East Asia, in the region where I live in, there's lower level of immigration in between. So people are sort of like, demographic are kind of very stable in that region. So probably that's why people would feel like, yes, we're quite different and we draw clear lines between different regions. Like you're Japanese, you're South Korean, I'm Chinese. Like it sounds like we have like clear lines, but in Europe it's like different case because people move around quite a lot, especially with the EU. So probably you wouldn't just, you would say this person is like European, you wouldn't just straightforward say you're British or French, whatever. So I think that's like a big difference between different regions.
Yeah, definitely.
Yeah, I think like overall, like Asian people are the majority of the population of the world, and it's a massive, massive continent. So I feel like to say that they all look the same, it's just so ignorant.
Yeah.
Here's a question leading on to that. How diverse are Asian ethnic groups like within themselves? So like how diverse would you say Chinese culture is between provinces, or Serena, between the North and South?
Serena, you want to start?
Yeah, sure. I mean, evidently very diverse. I think depending on, as with any kind of cultural diversity, depending on where you're located plays a massive role in it. So if you are from the North, it's cold, and if you're from the South, it's relatively less cold, so therefore you have kind of diversities in how cultural practices occur. Different ways. Okay, so Diwali, I'm assuming a lot of people have heard of that. I'm assuming a lot of people have also heard the phrase Deepavali. So that's a cultural difference in the terms of the way you celebrate some parts of the festival. And obviously India is heavily Hindu, but the fact that you even have those kind of diverse occasions within such a well-known festival. Not to mention language is a huge thing. I think there's over like 150 dialects and languages spoken throughout India. some of which are being lost, a lot of them derived from Sanskrit. And you have very much so this kind of devoluted power base of lots of villages, main cities, obviously, and very different cultures within that. So even in the north, you're very much so more, you're more traditional in terms of, if you live in cities, you know that kind of community very well. In the south, it's kind of the same, but you know a very different area, and your kind of traditions and the way your family has lived is very different. Not to mention the food is so different. So South Indian food, if you know what a dosa is, it's like this kind of giant, like kind of crispy piece of like bread, in a sense. It's like a giant crisp. That's what my sister calls a giant crisp, but that's very much so her being quite frustrating, but it is delicious. And it's like this kind of rice flour giant piece of bread, and you have like masala, which is like rice, dal, gobi, which is like potatoes, and like loads of spices in it, and you can have like a masala dosa, which is just, it's a breakfast food as well, so it's just it's amazing. And then like idli, so if you see like those little rice pancakes or like those little donut looking kind of things, the idlis and dosas and all of that, that's very much so something which you is South Indian. North Indian, you get a lot more curries. So if anyone's had an Indian takeout, I'm assuming you get a lot more North Indian food. Obviously, there are curries in the South. Although the South is a lot spicier food. You need to have much more preparation when you go to the South.
Yep.
I remember as a child, my mom would take me there as like trial by fire, just like give me the spiciest curry. But then you go to the North, and of course, that's still an issue. It's still spicy, but it's a very different type of cuisine. So you have more kind of things like naan breads. You have these more kind of dips and this kind of different way of doing it. The raita is slightly different, which is like the yogurt you get put on the side. And you have those kind of diversifications even within there. And also the celebrations you do celebrate within Hinduism, because it is such a bracketed religion. You can celebrate many different gods under one. And there's two also main lines of it where you worship two specific gods. I cannot remember the names, I do apologize. But there are two where you can go through them, and normally the North tends to idolize one, whereas the South idolizes the other. And then even within that, there's like 50 others you can idolize. It doesn't have to be those two. Those two are just like the most popular. So you can celebrate even Christianity under the bracket of Hinduism. It's crazy. So you have within those cultural kind of diversifications in different societies and different kind of villages and areas within that, just because sometimes it's more popular in one area than another. I think that's something which isn't acknowledged. And also, of course, the way you look in the north, you are fairer necessarily because you are in a colder area. So you've acclimatized. You don't need as much pigmentation in your skin to defend from the sun, which obviously is the reason why people tend to be necessarily of color if you're from a hotter country. And then in the south, where it does tend to be a lot hotter because you're a lot nearer the equator, you do tend to have people with a lot darker skin. So you can have people looking like, in fact, I think the second most common hair color in India is ginger, believe it or not, because actually it's genetic. Genetically, Indian people are Caucasian in the way in which they are made up. Their racial, like, I remember my mum got a passport, and her passport, it says Caucasian within it, even though she's brown. Because the actual like makeup of how we're built and physically, apart from colour, is the same as white people. And I think that's something which is never talked about or never realised whatsoever.
Just adding on to that, people from Africa, like Somali people, and I think maybe Eritrean or Ethiopian people, they are also considered Caucasian. So Caucasian is really just this outdated term, and it doesn't really mean anything anymore.
No, it's very Americanized, and they use it now to very much just describe white people, when obviously it isn't, and legally it isn't. So the judiciable term for it is actually false, which is quite interesting.
Okay. That was really interesting, Serena. For the situation in China, officially there are 56 ethnic groups in China.
Wow.
Which is quite surprising, because all Chinese kids learn about this when we're in primary school. But when I came here to England, I think people just like, do you guys just have one ethnic group called Han? I was like, no. I don't, like, Han is definitely the majority of Chinese people. I'm Han, like, personally. But there are still so many ethnic groups in China. And also, the ethnic groups have their autonomous regions in China. For example, some of the provinces are called autonomous province because that ethnic group lived there specifically for thousands of years. So they have their own ways of dealing with things sometimes. So that's why they have autonomous regions. So, and also talking about dialects, we have like so many different dialects in China. Like, my dialect is Cantonese, although some people would take that as language, language. But I would say that the differences between dialects is decreasing because of the popularity of Mandarin. But we do have many different accents of Mandarin in China. So from the accent of Mandarin, you can tell like which region this person is from, which is quite interesting. So yeah, Chinese people as a demographic group is actually quite diverse in nature. Yeah.
What do you think the main difference is between yourself and British people?
I should probably disclaim that I am very white passing in the way in which I look, and therefore I have been very lucky to not be subjugated to a lot of racial precedents against me for being Indian. I also sound very British. Both of my sisters are probably polar opposite. They look very much so Indian. And I've grown up in a very accepting society. Singapore's a cultural melting pot, so in somewhat I've been very lucky to not have that type of, I don't know, stereotypes put against me. But obviously having lived in Singapore and having had like those kind of different cultural values put inside of me and kind of assumed, I do often find myself, even with by being brought up by my mother who is and my father who lived in India for a long time with heavily Indian infused values, I've realized there are some things which I do which maybe morally are slightly ambiguous apart to British people. So like certain traditions and certain ways in which I live my life, certain traits I have, I can be quite assertive sometimes without realizing it, and I don't intend to be rude or anything, and I hope I never come across as rude, but I know that I am aware sometimes I am very much more, I'm quite pragmatic about how I would like things to get done or how it should be done. I'm not, mm-hmm. I find it very strange that there's like this kind of British way of, if something goes wrong, you kind of keep it quite quiet or to yourself. And this might be a stereotype in itself, but just this kind of, you keep it quiet. A lot of things are kept behind closed doors. In Indian families, if something goes wrong, it is public news, it is spread across everyone. Obviously, sometimes if it's a very big issue in one area, it's kept quite quiet. But if you have a problem with somebody, you talk to them about it. Mm-hmm. And I think that's a huge thing, which in British culture, I found very odd, how it's not as confrontational. And I think that's just across the board, for good or for bad. I don't think there's a right or a wrong. But there is that, and I think just the ways my values, my set of moral values, I am Hindu, so certain ways I obviously worship Christianity under that bracket, some under certain brackets of it, depending what type of Hindu you are, you might disagree or agree with that. But there are different, like certain festivals I celebrate, so like this year with Diwali, I found it really interesting how the coronavirus pandemic is completely accustomed to only celebrating Christmas. And like it makes sense that they are, because it is a British country, it is like a fundamentally Christian country. But I think there should be some level of acceptance for people who wanted to celebrate, or like some kind of, I mean, you have an entire system which is being brought around one specific festival, and the Diwali is the Christmas of Hinduism. Okay, it's not like a minor festival. It's not like one of the more minor ones which we did have to miss. This was a very big one, and this mm-hmm. was a like renowned big one, and the government just completely ignored it, which I found interesting. And I think it was just horrendous, the fact that they had that kind of agenda when they knew there was a huge Indian population within the UK. Mm-hmm. So in terms of culture, there is definitely differences, and in terms of also, my family is so big, there are so many people, we all live in the same area, we're all really loud, and we're all in each other's faces, and it's wonderful, and it's crazy, but it is the way it is. And a lot of British families aren't like that, and a lot of mm-hmm. them are, but I feel like in my family it is also sometimes like we are very close as a family, and I know that not all Indian families are, but I feel like there is this kind of family value which is underpinned in a lot of what I do. So that's something definitely prevalent, which I think sometimes juxtaposes certain elements of British culture. Mm. But yeah, so what about you?
Yeah, that's really interesting. I would say probably some of you may know about this. There's a political scientist called Huntington. He once categorized different civilizations in the world, which he thought that would be an influential in global politics. So I would say that I'm definitely being categorized into the Confucianism civilization. So I think being born and brought up in China as a Chinese, I think the major difference between me and like the British society as a whole, I would say, would be our different mindset and values sometimes. So as Serena just mentioned, in Asia, especially in East Asia, I think under the Confucianism culture, I think we value more of the community or the family of individuals, that makes sense. While when I came here to the UK, I feel like the society as a whole will value the individuals more over the society sometimes, mm-hmm. which I think it's quite interesting. I wouldn't say that which one is superior than the other, but I do found that's how we like that, like the difference that how people view things can actually lead to different results. Like when the coronavirus just hit, like last year, we can see that a lot of East Asian countries just implement very harsh restrictions, like wearing masks, keeping social distance. We don't see a lot of people complaining about that. While I mean, in the UK and US, especially, I feel like more people are complaining about it because they think it's a violation of their like individual liberty, whatever. I do think that it's a reasonable argument, but as a like an individual being brought up under Confucianism, I wouldn't agree with that personally. So yeah, I think that's the major difference I can find here.
Okay, something very prevalent in Western societies when referring mm-hmm. to Asians, particularly East Asians, is the model minority myth. And I say myth because obviously it isn't true. This myth entails things like all Asians are good at maths, all Asians know how to play like the violin or the piano, all Asians have tiger parents, you know, things like that. How would you personally feel, how do you guys feel about this?
Definitely it's not true. I feel like this kind of stereotype is being inherited like from years and years before, when the first era of Asian immigrants going into the Western society. Well, because during that time, if you're not good academically or whatever, you couldn't even have the chance to immigrate into another country. So probably that's why those people are good at math. They're like just good at everything. But now I think as the world is more globalized, this is definitely not the case, because I mean, yes, I'm good at math, but not that kind of good. It's just one of the subjects that I would do that I work hard for. Yeah. It's not definitely that all Asian students are good at math, and also I'm not good at musical instruments either.
I think it's like that thing with all stereotypes which you kind of are forced to combat, that like, yeah, an element of it is true. That's why it's derived from it. And there's historical reasons as to why. Like, as Zoe said, when you immigrate to a new country and you're first generation immigrants, you need to make money. So you want mm-hmm. to try and get the best job. So your parents push you to work harder than maybe people who already have establishment there. But obviously now when you're having, like you said, globalization, you don't have this issue. And I think just with all stereotypes, there will always be an element of truth. But it's a stereotype. Not everyone mm-hmm. is the same. There can be stereotypes for every single culture. And I think the thing with the model minority myth is the fact that it is fundamentally something which is not true. And I think now becoming less true with the increase of globalization and the increased like immigration all over the world. And I think it's something which needs to be acknowledged. And I think, right, you will have like Asian people who are good at maths, but you also have like, I don't know, English people who are good at maths, and like Italian people who are good at maths, and like mm-hmm. Indian people who are good at maths, and then Australian people. You can have them from everywhere.
Definitely.
It's not something which is solely occupied by one demographic, and it's mm-hmm. not something which should be stereotyped, because I mean, I'm Indian, and I'm not going to be a doctor. That's just not in my range of abilities. I can't do it, unfortunately. might go into law, so maybe play into that one. But that's not the point. Like, you have these stereotypes. It's things that you have to deal with and you have to try and overcome. And I think with time it will. But I think there is just this kind of absolute rolling your eyes. And I've heard about, like, the Asian toll in getting into universities like mm-hmm. Harvard and, like, Central London universities. They have this. And I think it's not the type of positive discrimination which is needed at this point in time.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. I think it's almost counteracting it. And if you're worried about British people not getting their places in the same way, I think it's something you need to tell the British people to start working harder for, because it's obviously this is an academic qualification. And I think in that regard, it's something which the British people do not. They have many other places to go if they have positive affirmation, and I think they have good places and they have equal opportunities to them. And I don't mm-hmm. think it's something which affirmative action needs to be taken. Whereas in other circumstances, I would argue like that affirmative action is needed.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, just like to touch on the topic of tiger parents. Mm-hmm. Well, personally, I don't have tiger parents, I assure you. And I think why people would say that tiger parents are quite prevalent, especially in Asia, I think that's because, like, look at the population in Asia.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
It's huge, which means that there will be more competition in the society.
Massively.
For jobs, for wealth, for income, whatever. So that's why a lot of parents just want to push their kids to upper, like, to upper boundaries, that to achieve what they can achieve.
Definitely.
When they are doing the best. So that's why people will say, oh, they're tiger parents. But look at, like, Europe, like, the birth rate is just so low. Like, the competition is low as well as a result. That's why, probably, that's why, like, parents are, like, more relaxed about the fact.
Also, I think culturally slightly, it is, you do want to do your best. Your goal is to get your child to do your best. That's a very, I don't know, it's been culturally, I was brought up with my mum always, I would say my mum is borderline a tiger parent, but the thing she always, this is how me and my sisters describe it, we say, yeah, you have to, you can do your best, but you're best than an A star. And I think in her mind, in any mother's mind, that is, they want to see their child do their best. And I know to my mum, if something was to go wrong, but she'd known I'd done my best. That is honestly all that matters, but she would check that I'd done my best. I think that's kind of the difference. But literally, as Zoe says, it is a demographic thing as well. Mm-hmm. It is largely if there are just more people. And I think in British culture as well, you have a lot of economic safety nets because you are just economically more well off than a lot of Asian cultures, and you don't have that kind of wealth divide, as you're saying, so vastly. Whereas you don't have that safety net if you're, like, middle class in a lot of these countries which might need them, because you will find yourself slipping through the cracks. And I think that's something which is, like, important to recognise. And I think in the UK you have benefits, you have systems which can catch you, not necessarily very well, but you have it. There is a kind of social welfare intervention to a level which is accessible. And I think accessibility opposed to just legislation is a very important point to make. And I think that's a huge reason why you do have parents like that. And I don't necessarily think it's a bad thing, unless it starts to affect mental health and things like that. Then I think there is, like, a kind of line. But I get it. I kind of understand it.
Relating back to the model minority thing, I think whilst that sometimes it is good for people to look at you and presume something good about you, it is holding people to a standard that, like, isn't fair. And my own experience being partially, like, Asian and then black, I was in the top sets in my old school in all of my lessons, and it was my sociology class, and we were working out the demographic of the class, and I said that, like, you've put me in black, but I'm also, like, Asian, I'm Chinese as well. And somebody turned to me and he said, that's why you're so smart. And I just thought it was so insulting to assume something like that.
Yeah, just to emphasize, someone get top grades because they work hard, not because of where they come from.
Exactly. Yeah, no, exactly. The amount of tech support jokes I've had, which is crazy as well, because I'm awful at technology. Like, I barely know how to use an iPhone. So, no. Nice try, but I can't help you.
Yeah.
But then, of course, you do have people who like these areas, because, of course, they're areas which, like, people, you work harder when you have more to work for. And I think when you have a history, even if it's not directly, or you're not even your parents, but it's your great-grandparents, when you have that kind of inclination and you don't have that safety net, and you don't want to go back to maybe the country you necessarily come from. Mm. There's a reason you've immigrated. You don't want to end up being sent back. It is something really important to found yourself a stable living so that you have grounds to stay, which I think is a much more prevalent thing in the US than anywhere else. But
yeah, I do agree with that, because it's like, I accept the fact that more people will be expecting, like, Asian international student coming here to the UK to study things related to, like, engineering or math, that kind of thing, because I think science is more, I think it's something for all the cultures, while subjects like history, it might be culture oriented. So students in China who love history might just stay in China and learn about ancient Chinese history, but not coming to the UK to study about, like, the Western history. So that's why you see fewer history international students here, but doesn't mean that all, like, more Asians are doing, like, math or, like, other sciences.
Actually, as a history international student, I can probably speak on this one. Definitely, I did come here very much so knowing that it would be very British centric, and one of the reasons I actually chose Wellington is because some aspects of the course were international, but by international they meant not Asian, it was still US and South Africa, which is still fascinating. Actually, the South African model is probably why I chose it in the end. But it's a lot better than a lot of other schools where you literally just learn about one culture. But as you say, in China, you just learn about, like, Chinese history, in Singapore, you learn a lot about Singaporean. I mean, I'm a great believer in this needing to be solved, that we kind of have more level of understanding and getting rid of some of these stereotypes which exist and giving more people that access. But I think also science is valued differently in countries where medical care isn't as widespread, and access to it and access to healthcare and accessibility to these fundamental things which are needed are highly regarded. So I know in my family, if you're Indian, you want to be a doctor, it's very highly regarded because you can help people and you can do things for the greater good for people who can't access it. And I think in a country which is small like the UK, and it's kind of got more internal like accessibility, you have the NHS, but even in the US where you have access to healthcare quite easily if you're lucky, in most places there's a hospital nearby, be that you can or can't afford it. In terms of literal accessibility, it's something which is huge, and I think there is definitely a push in like the legal industry, making sure you're not accused of something falsely and making sure you're healthy. These are family values as well, of just being okay, which I think is a cultural thing which is hugely pushed. And even now in the arts is huge as well. Tiger parents push the arts. My whole family, like lots of them are artists. So that's a big thing. If you're good at what you're good at, you're good at it. I mean, musical instruments is one of the stereotypes.
Yeah.
And I know that's definitely one, because you, it helps you, it gives you that kind of expression, it gives you an outlet. But obviously there are other people who do other kinds of art, which is phenomenal.
I just know how to do some musical instrument, but doesn't mean that I'm specialist.
Exactly. I feel like most people who want to learn musical instruments can teach themselves or find some way of outletting it at some point in their lifetime. And I feel like the stereotype of, not all, I mean, living in Singapore, not many, I did music and definitely it was not all Asian people who did music. There was a good mix in there.
The next question is, do you feel like Asian minorities in Western countries are socially ignored?
Yeah, to some extent, yes. Because I feel like they would automatically exclude you, if that makes sense. Because they would feel like, yes, you're from the outside world, instead of being part of us. While I do think that, especially here in Wellington, I think the whole environment is quite inclusive. To be an international student, I never feel that I'm being excluded, at least. So yeah, I quite like the atmosphere here, but I do feel like in general in society, they would, people would just automatically exclude you because they think you look very different and you think different as well, and they feel like, yes, we'll do different things. That's why they would just not like let you in to be part of them.
To play devil's advocate here, I think there is also into double-edged sword, whereas then because you do have this history of people who look different being excluded in the UK, I know in a lot of Asian cultures as well, you are very much so tribal and you do like to stay with who you know. And I think it is definitely sometimes you exclude yourself indirectly. I know my family, sometimes I've seen it and I don't agree with it, and I'll say something, I always try to say something like, this is crazy, there's a reason. You want to get them to talk to us, you also need to talk to them. And sometimes it's about being the bigger person in the room. And I think sometimes a lot of Asian cultures will be like, they can just sit there and be like, why should I talk to you then otherwise? Which is understandable, it's human nature. And like I said, playing devil's advocate here. But it is that kind of two-way street where you have to kind of decide which direction you want to take with it.
Yeah, I do agree with Serena. It's more like a mutual exclusion.
Yeah.
So it's like, yes, I assume that you are not going to talk to me. So I'm not talking to you. So yeah, I think the gap is like creating constantly.
It's definitely something which is so embedded now, and it's quite scary. It's something which you see and you're like, right, well, that's needs to be fixed, but it's like, who's gonna speak first, isn't it? It's like this kind of competition, this kind of stalemate where you're just kind of there like, right, your move, and they're like, no, your move, and then you're just oh gosh,
and nobody moves at the end.
And then you're just sitting there, and I think this is why having conversations like this are so important, is to just kind of say, we do want to talk to you, and when we are different, we're equally scared of, you're foreign to us. Like when people come to a new country, even if like, if anyone's ever moved schools, you're scared of people because you don't know them. It's as simple as that. No matter what you look like, no matter if you're any color of the rainbow, from any culture, you're going to be different. That's half the point, is to talk to people. That's how you grow as a nation. That's how it becomes this kind of political identity, and this kind of cultural identity can kind of merge into one giant melting pot. And I love that phrase, melting pot. It's just, I think it's, that's exactly what the world is and exactly how the world should be described. And I find its little divides within it, it's just like, I'm not going to personify it into some cooking metaphor, as tempted as I am. But I think it is this kind of split region which we really should work on merging, because we're not all that different, if I'm honest. We're all just different shades of human.
Something that I do, like relating back to the modern minority myth, that you do find is that The needs of Asian minorities are sometimes not just socially but politically ignored. I read this book called The Good Immigrant, and there was this section on the model minority myth, and you see things like when there was this man who owned a Chinese takeaway store, and he kept calling up and he was saying, these kids keep throwing things out my window, they keep trying to break my window, they keep like harassing me, and the police continue to ignore him because they knew he was Asian. I mean, historically in the UK there haven't been any like riots or protests from the like, Chinese minorities on their own. So they do end up being ignored, and sadly the man did end up being like killed in a hate crime from those same children that he was calling the police against because his needs weren't taken seriously. And then linking back to social ignorance and what Serena said about Diwali, something really like surprising to me is that the British national dish is apparently chicken tikka. But then when Indian people but when Indian people have needs and want to celebrate their very important holiday, it's very much ignored. And I think that's, I don't know, it's just something to think about.
It's something very ingrained in the way in which we act in society. And I think, look at the coronavirus pandemic, which was obviously, it started in China. There's many hate crimes which have happened in the last year against people who look Asian. Obviously, there's a Singaporean one in the US, which sparked such outcry in the UK. This is just one of many horrific things that occurred. And something I noticed personally from reading the news is that you were hearing about them, but the as with a lot of hate crimes, you don't hear a lot of action being done. And there are people who are genuinely scared to go outside, and the governments were just thinking, yeah, but you're not gonna, nothing's gonna happen to you. They don't realize the threat. As with, I mean, to be honest, you can apply this to many different situations, and many different, anyone who thinks differently or looks different will suffer from this. But I think when you have certain issues like the coronavirus, and when you have certain problems, and especially if it's been reported to the police and the police are aware of it, this should be something which is treated as a case, this should be something on a case-by-case basis, opposed to this kind of lumped in stereotype of, well, you're Asian, so you're not really troublesome, we'll just let you be. That shouldn't even be a definition. There shouldn't even be an adjective after that. There shouldn't even be that classification. That should be not acknowledged, in my opinion at least, whatsoever. There's a crime. You have a job. Please do your job.
I totally agree with that. Like, following that coronavirus example, like, Asian people are just being beaten up on the street without even saying anything or doing anything. I mean, they're not causing trouble in this essence if you are still taking that stereotype. So, I mean, yes, they should do something to stop people beating up other people just because of stereotype. It's just not right.
Yeah, no, completely agreed.
Another question I had linking on to the... Another thing I wanted to ask you guys is, how do you feel about when you guys are in school, do you feel like Chinese New Year, Diwali, do you feel like there are proper resources for you to be able to celebrate your holidays?
Not at all, if I'm honest. I say this because of the recent Diwali. I was actually denied access out of school at a point and had to go quite a long route to get permission to leave, which was quite an outrage, in my opinion. My family was not happy, but I mean, that was also to do with the COVID lockdown, so I understand it, somewhat out of the school's power. The school definitely does acknowledge it. I know the international committee, as me and Zoe are both on it, and Zoe runs it, so
I sent an email about
Diwali. She sent a really good email. So that was probably the only thing that was done, and sometimes it's mentioned in assembly if you're lucky. But if I'm honest, it's not something which we have to go to chapel very often, even if you're not necessarily a practicing Christian. And I think there is a lack of religious education and lack of kind of cultural education in some areas of school life. I think the school are definitely making an effort, and I think they are going in the right direction, but I think with everything you can always do a little bit more. And I think in terms of just learning about other cultures and learning about how it works, I've heard cases of students who are brown being called the same name as other students who are brown, which is crazy when there aren't that many brown kids in the school. I know the same problem I think Shade was saying about black people having the same problem at the school. Yeah. Which
same
is
with Chinese. Like, they just mixed us up.
It's insane. If you can manage to figure out the three Emilys in the class, different names, you can figure it out. But no, that's also a stereotype. So, but you see my point, is the fact that you can have these differences, and there does need to be this kind of widespread just acknowledgement of cultures. Mm-hmm. And like, celebrate Diwali. Diwali is so much fun to celebrate. Even if you don't, even if you're not Hindu, light a few diyas, like light some candles, let's get some sparklers out, let's have a discussion about the stories, let's do it as if it's not a religious festival to you, and I'll just educate you about my culture, and I'll teach you, because you'll enjoy it. The funniest thing is the people who complain the most about wanting to do it, they enjoy it the most. It's crazy. They say, what's your weekend like? Oh, I went to celebrated Diwali. What did you do? That's a bit silly. Oh no, I had like a really nice time. I dropped, I ate the best food of my life. Oh, can you bring me some of the food? Yes, but you need to listen to what I'm saying. They'll be like, oh, that's so cool, that makes sense why you eat that now, and that makes sense why you do that. And it's crazy. I just end up rolling my eyes at these people. I'm like, it's so interesting. I find interest in your culture. And I think you should find interest in mine. I find interest in amazing things. I learned about, when I moved to Singapore, the first festival I learned was the Spring Festival, Mid-Autumn and Spring Festival. And it was the first character I learned to write in Mandarin was the character for spring, and I'll never forget it. And I learned about mooncakes, which are crazy, and how they how they burn fires to get rid of ghosts at the end of roads. It's crazy. It's insane, and it's so interesting. And you learn about like the animal and the calendar years and all of that. And it's the Lunar New Year is such a big celebration.
Exactly.
And it's amazing. And Dragon Boat festivals. I've been in three Dragon Boats. Amazing.
That's really good.
It's really good. But this is the thing with every single culture, not just Asian, not just British, not just everything. And I think if Wellington really, they're good. They're very, have a really good accepting ethos. But I think it is really just embracing that. I don't know. Zoe, what's your opinion?
Yeah, I feel like, well, as a Chinese, I feel my culture is being valued to a satisfactory level, at least in my point of view, here at Wellington. I think that's basically because, like, Wellington College has more bonds with China. Like, look at how many Wellington schools in China. So I think they do value Chinese culture like very much. For example, like, we have the Chinese New Year celebration, we have the dragon dance. So I wouldn't say that it's a big thing among student bodies or like in the daily life, but at least on that day we are being valued. So I'm quite happy about that. So that's one of the things that I like Wellington the most about. But I do feel like, as Serena said, I want people to know more about it apart from food. I mean, like, the core of it, for example, in September it was the Mid-Autumn Festival. It's about family reunion, that kind of thing. So I do want people to know not just about mooncakes are delicious, but I do want them to know that it's something, it's a time for family reunion. And then the legend and the story behind it is also very fascinating. It's just like when Chinese people were celebrating Christmas sometimes, they wouldn't treat it as a religious festival. They would treat it as like a fun event. But they also learn about like their origins of Christmas, what Western people would do during Christmas, which is so interesting, to be honest.
I think it's a lot to do with respecting. Like, I know a lot of people sometimes find it weird to celebrate like festivals, which obviously they don't directly affect, or they're scared of offending. But if I'm honest, I think the kind of appreciation. I know, like, my Indian family celebrate Christmas, and my dad's quite Christian, and we spend Christmas days at theirs a lot. But I think it's that kind of appreciation of their culture and that kind of respect for it. I think that endearance to learn about it and then to celebrate it is really what's important. And I think if you do anything with the right mentality, and I think you can't do that type of thing with a vicious mentality. You wouldn't celebrate it if you were doing it with a vicious mentality, realistically. I think it's something you should definitely do, and definitely just, even if not celebrate it, just learn about it, or maybe do something a bit more than, like you say, more than the food.
More than the food.
That's all we're saying. I mean, don't get me wrong, food's amazing. I understand it. I completely understand it. But there's more to it. And actually, I think the more you know, the more interested you'll be, and the more globalized view you'll get. And I think with just approach to anything, no matter what subject you do or where you are in life, a globalized view of whatever you do is so, so much better than having just one perspective. As with everything in life, you can't just look at something from one line of argument. I say that, I'm a historian, so that's how I do things. But that is, I think, a good way to go.
You've linked on very well to our next topic, but before I do that, fun fact, Indonesia is actually the most Muslim country in the world. and it's the largest Muslim country in the world, and people didn't know that because of like a lot of stereotypes. So my last question today is, how do you guys feel about cultural appropriation, and what do you think the difference is between cultural appropriation and appreciation in regards to your respective cultures?
Okay, I'll just lead on what I was just saying then. Yeah, I think there's definitely a line. And I think in terms of appreciation, if you do anything with the right mentality and you want to learn and you want to celebrate it, I'm never going to stop you. And I think you can be from any ethnic heritage you want to be from, or you are from even, that makes more sense, but any ethnic heritage. And then you can come into a culture and celebrate it. I think there are some lines which you need to recognize are offensive into certain cultures. Maybe what you might not find offensive might be. So I think learning about that and educating yourself prior is important. But like, I think when I was in year two, I had a Diwali, or like a, my birthday party was coincided with Diwali. Like, even though my birthday's a lot later, we did it there because I wanted to celebrate it with my friends. And that was my kind of excuse when I was like eight. so a lot of my friends turned up were British, and they all turned up in saris and lehengas and like kuttas. And it was amazing. And you saw all these kids from all these different cultures, and they loved it. And they learnt about the Ramayana, and they learnt about all these cultural coins. They learnt to eat Indian sweets, and they got henna done. They had all of these things which are really interesting, and they didn't just take it at face value. And I think that's where I would say cultural appreciation comes from, because you are appreciating a culture. You're not appreciating the superficiality or the materialistic features of that culture. You're appreciating what the culture actually means and why. And I think you can do it, but you need to know why, and you need to understand it. And if it is offensive, understand why it is offensive and why you shouldn't do it, I think, is also the big thing. I think, know why people say not to do that. Nobody's telling you not to do it for a reason. There's reasons as to why. Like, put it this way, in India, you come to a funeral, you wear white. I would never turn up at a British funeral wearing white.
Yeah.
Do you see my point? So it's just those kind of lines, like, know when not to do something and when to. And it's obviously, like, with all these things, it's a two-way road, but
yeah, I totally agree with Serena. It's all about the mentality. So like, I do see like students walking around the college wearing their clothes with Chinese characters on them. I mean, I can read them and doesn't make any sense at all, which is a fun fact, guys. Be careful when you're buying clothes like that. But I do find it interesting. I wouldn't say it's offensive to me, because I feel like people are wearing that because they want to learn about this culture, at least that's what Lord might take away from them wearing those clothes. So I'm totally fine with that. But I mean, if someone is wearing a cloth with insulting language on that, like on purpose, I mean, well, why are you doing that to my culture? I mean, it's just not good. So I think the cultural appreciation is all about how you view the culture, and then how you are being acceptive to something that is different to yours. Yep. So I think that's really important to learn about. I mean, I'm learning as well, because I'm now living in a totally different cultural environment. So I'm still learning. So I think everyone should keep an open mind.
Yeah, these are very, very good.
What's your view on that?
I feel like it differs from culture to culture. So I would, my opinion on it when it comes to Indian culture or Chinese culture is completely different to my opinion when it comes to Black culture, just because there have been different reactions to these things. I say if you want to appreciate a culture, then most people, almost everyone, would be so happy to help you do so. And I just think, make sure it's in the right environment, make sure you have the right intentions, and make sure you know what you're doing. Like, don't just go get a tattoo on your back of like Chinese characters, because more times than not, you're gonna end up with chicken soup than love. And it's just
so good.
Make sure you know what you're doing, and make sure people from that ethnic or cultural group are like happy to help you do so, because there are certain lines that you shouldn't cross. I mean, if you want to wear a lehenga to a wedding, then people would be more than happy to help you. But if you were to wear like a traditional like Sikh headdress as a man, most people wouldn't want you to do that, because it has importance, and there are differences when it comes to certain things. So it's not a one rule fits all kind of situation. But more times than not, the best thing to do is ask, and I think that's in almost every situation, not just this one.
Yeah. Just a fun fact, red is the most appropriate color to wear to happy events in China, so don't wear white when you're invited to a wedding.
Yeah, there you go. Yeah, I can't wear white when you go to a wedding in India either, actually. Mm-hmm. Bride's meant to wear red there as well, actually.
It's so surprising. So many non-Western cultures, white is the color of mourning and stuff like that.
I turned up in a black sari once to a wedding, and my English friends were horrified. They're like, why are you wearing black to a wedding? It's not a funeral, Serena. I said, why would you wear white to a wedding? It's not a funeral. And they're like, no.
You can't wear both of the colors.
Yeah. Exactly. That was brilliant. Thank you so much, Nicole.
Thank you, guys, because you are doing this for me. So I am very, very grateful, and this was so interesting.
Mm-hmm.
Thank you.
I hope you guys enjoy listening to this.
Yeah, I really hope you did. And do get in touch if you have any questions or anything, or if you want to do a podcast on your culture, get in touch with either myself or Zoe or Nicole. If you want, we all kind of have links now to the Jukebox Studio.
Yeah.
So do just let us know, or even Mrs. Gutteridge, of course, as well.
Mm-hmm.
But yeah, thank you so much for listening.
Thank you so much. Bye.